So how we got here is interesting. Shannon mentioned I've sort of found myself, and those of us on the Austin Court of Appeals kind of found ourselves at the epicenter of what became the swallowing of the Texas legal system by one statute. for some reason, Austin has led the number of opinions on this statute. We've had more cases filed here. Shannon pointed out when we were preparing that, you know, some of the issues that have led to us speaking at this conference is because we have so many technology companies here, and their trade secret cases, of course, are going to come up through the Austin Court of Appeals. So in some ways, it makes sense. I can tell you that when we first started getting these cases, it was a trickle. We didn't see very many of them. I got one of the first ones assigned to me. It was a case between the Church of Scientology and one of its former members who had left the church. And the church, she was claiming that the church was harassing her, and the church filed one of these motions saying, dismiss her case because we're exercising our free speech rights. We didn't think the statute could possibly go that far. We wrote an opinion denying that relief. I wrote an opinion for the court denying that relief. And as soon as the Texas Supreme Court got a hold of this statute and told us, no, it actually, you have to apply the exact wording, no matter how broad that wording is, we realize in retrospect that the opinion I wrote was probably wrong. It's too late for them, sorry, Church of Scientology. But it's too late at that point. But we realized, oh, no, this is really going to be as broad as we had feared. And actually, before the Supreme Court got a hold of it, I'd written in a concurrence. I want to read you, because for once I was right about something ahead of time. So, you know, I could never predict the real estate market. I used to laugh about all the cranes around Austin and how this was all going to be condos. I mean, who's going to buy a condo downtown? So for once, I was right about something. So I want to make sure I point it out. in concurrence, I wrote, it seems that any skilled litigator could figure out a way to file a motion to dismiss under the TCPA in nearly every case, in the hope that the case will not only be dismissed, but that the movement will also be awarded attorney's fees. In short, it is difficult to imagine that the legislature intended for the TCPA to turn civil litigation practice in general on its head. Yet that is the natural consequence of the language used in the statute. And unfortunately, I was right. We started getting these cases filed in disputes between neighbors over fence lines. We got motions in, of course, trade secret cases like Shannon mentioned. We got motions. The bottom for me was when we got a motion to dismiss an appeal that was filed at our court. Someone filed a motion to dismiss at our court saying the appeal violated the statute. I started giving speeches at CLE, and my colleagues told me, don't say this, but I told them, I said, I don't know why the family bar isn't using this statute. It could apply in every family law case, every divorce case, if someone really wanted to. And the effects of this are monumental. If you file a suit and someone files a motion to dismiss under the TCPA and it's denied, that party gets an automatic appeal. Everything at the trial court is stayed. You have probably a year and a half to wait before anything can happen in that trial court proceeding while the courts are deciding whether the TCPA applies. And if the Texas Supreme Court takes it, it's even going to be longer than that. It could be two and a half years. So we saw a number of these cases. I was, for some reason, I don't know if I was just, someone was mad at me or whatever, I seemed to be on the panel for every one of them. And I can tell you that courts do not like them. It takes up a lot of the docket. They're very complicated. You wouldn't think a early in the case motion would be complicated. They're extremely complicated. And the reason for that is the language of the statute doesn't make a lot of sense. It includes a number of kind of terms of art that have never been defined, never been explored in court. So almost every case you would write as a judge was a case of first impression. And so, as you can imagine, I can tell you right now, if cases of first impression, Judge Yackel can correct me if I'm wrong, but cases of first impression make you a little nervous as a judge. It's much easier to be a judge when you have something you can look at that someone's already written on a subject and either agree or disagree with that. But on TCPA, it was almost always a case of first impression. I can tell you that since I've been back in private practice all of 3 months, I would say about 50% of my time has been spent advising clients on the TCPA. If you represent a client and you file a lawsuit in Texas in the commercial context, anything other than a personal injury case, and you do not seek advice or at least advise yourself on whether the TCPA could apply, I am telling you right now, I'm not so sure you haven't committed malpractice. This statute applies to almost every proceeding you can think of, at least until the amendment takes effect. And it just does. So I'm going to come back eventually after we talk some more and talk about how we got to the amendment, because there are good reasons, and we'll talk about the amendment's effect. But I want to give you just to whet your appetite for that. Understand where the statute has taken us. In 2012, two opinions in the state of Texas on the statute. 2016, 25 opinions. 2018, 90 opinions. May of 2019 alone, 20 opinions.